Hello and welcome to the Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Gribble. I've been celebrating students and staff on social media since 2014. I'm in the trenches with you, and I know it's not an easy task. So if you're responsible for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more for a K-12 school district, you are in the right spot. You're going to lean in and learn some simple, actionable tips to help you reach even more people. And that's all going to happen while keeping your sanity. So let's get started. Hey there, welcome to the podcast. So this intro has been re-recorded. Why? Because for some reason, the audio on today's interview was not set up properly on my end. Now, my guest, Ryan Mayers, out of Austin Public Schools in Minnesota. He sounds wonderful and he is sharing a lot of stuff, a lot of great stuff. And we did not re-record the whole podcast interview, but I am being transparent. I am not perfect, far from it. But today's interview is awesome, but I re-recorded the intro just so that you could hear me clearly when it's mainly about me, the intro and the K-12 PR tip. And then when we get into the interview with Ryan, Ryan's going to sound fantastic. I'm going to be pretty legible, but you're going to be able to tell that my real mic is not working and it's my computer instead. Lesson learned. I'm always double checking that before I hit record. So today we're talking all about going from an engaging teacher to a really powerful storyteller. And Ryan is doing a great job in Austin Public Schools. He went from a math teacher to kind of a tech director, tech integrationist, to a communications coordinator. And he's got some unique, setup in regards to the diversity in his community, the socioeconomic status. And he's done really great things as a one-person shop in a school district of 5,000 students. And he's really going to break down some of the social media features that he posts on a regular basis and some of the feedback that the community has provided to help provide guidance in going forward. So as always, Ryan's going to share a wealth of knowledge for you. Just quickly, Christmas is right around the corner. And I know you've probably got your wish list all full, but maybe you don't. And maybe if you haven't grabbed your copy of Social Media for Schools, the book written by yours truly, Andrea Gribble, maybe that would be something great to ask for. It is available on Amazon. You can go right to the link in the show notes, send it off, put it on your wish list on Amazon, and you never know what might be wrapped under the tree. It's going to be 365 days of support and inspiration. It's your go-to guide for running social media effectively for a school district. So put that on your wish list. Now let's get to today's K-12 PR tip. All right, today's K-12 PR tip is based on a message I got recently. I got a message in our membership group, which is made up of hundreds of schools all across the country where we're constantly interacting and sharing ideas. But somebody asked, hey, you know, I've got a picture with a certificate on it. How do I blur out the name? Well, first of all, I'm so proud that you recognized that there was a full first and last name on that certificate. That's really, really great. Second is recognizing the fact that, hey, I shouldn't put that out there on social media. You definitely want to check your own guidelines. But there's a couple ways to do this. First of all, you could crop the picture if there's a way to crop it so that the name just doesn't show. The other things are there's tools usually on your phone, or Canva has Magic Erase now where you can actually erase things and make it look really good. So sometimes it just takes that extra effort. I know that if I take a screenshot on my iPhone, it instantly takes it into an editing tool where I'm able to take a pen or any color and actually, mark out the name. So that makes it really easy too. So first of all, think about it. Think about those names that could be showing up on desks or certificates or other spots, name tags. And then take the time to actually blur those out or eliminate them. So that's our tip today. I hope that you can take that and run with it. And now let's get to this week's poor audio on my part, great audio on Ryan's part. Listen in, you're going to get some great tips and tricks and strategies. Let's roll. Ryan Mayer's in the house. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. It's a little quieter now. We're take two. This is real life in school PR.
There you go. You gotta roll with the punches.
You gotta roll with the punches. And we just kicked somebody out of Ryan's office, but it's so good. Ryan, I'm excited to have you here. You're doing amazing work.
Thank you.
I would love for you to share your background and then kind of your role and how you got into your role with Austin Public.
So I actually went to school to be a math teacher. I have a degree, a bachelor's in math, taught geometry and algebra to middle school students in inner city Richmond, Virginia for a couple years, moved to southern Minnesota, where I became a geometry statistics college algebra prep teacher for a couple years. Over the course of all that, we started using technology to help reach the students, things like music videos and going out into the city and actually getting pictures that we could do word problems based around actual landmarks and things that the kids see every day to help draw them into what they're learning. And I started to see kind of the potential and how we can utilize technology to reach kids more effectively. And it was amazing. These windows that I was like, wow, that would be great. We at the same time hired a technology integrationist, which is someone who teaches technology to teachers and how to effectively utilize that in the classroom. We opened a new school that was focused entirely on STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And so they were actually looking to hire a second tech integrationist. And a whole bunch of stuff happened, but I interviewed, ended up getting the job as the district tech integrationist. And so the very first day when I walked in, they said, by the way, you're also now in charge of our website, which works out well for me because, like I said, I was a math major. I took coding classes when I was in college. And so I had a background in HTML and some other different coding languages. And so it wasn't as daunting as it might have been. Ended up kind of rewriting our website at that point and try to make it more user-friendly, a little bit more visually appealing. They said, that looks great. What about this new social media thing that we've been hearing about? So we started developing that. Got to the point where it was, what can we do to share the story of Austin Public Schools? So when you search for Austin, you search for our schools, what you're seeing is these positive stories and not just our test scores aren't where we want them to be, or our graduation rates aren't what we want them to be. How do we share the good things more widely? And so that's kind of where we are now. My soapbox version of this whole thing is there are amazing things that are happening in our schools, amazing things that are happening in our classrooms, but education is such a siloed profession where it's my classroom, my domain, what I do here is my stuff. And teachers aren't great about sharing that, about pushing that out there into the community, letting their parents see it, letting the community members see it. And so what I see as my job is, how do we get those stories, those amazing hands-on activities, those programs, those opportunities that students are getting in the classroom, and share them more widely so that everybody can see them, so that we get stakeholder buy-in. So when we get to things like referendums, or we get to things where we need support from the community for various programs or whatever, we have that goodwill built up. How do we not create good stories, but how do we share those amazing good stories that are already happening around us? And that's kind of where I am at this point, whether it's social media, photography, video, just whatever we can do to get the story of Austin Public Schools out into the community.
I can tell from listening to you how passionate you are, Ryan.
I didn't grow up in Austin. My kids have grown up in Austin. We have a connection here, and there really are amazing things going on. It's not just a catchphrase. Yeah. There really are. And we've seen a drastic change from the negative view from the community, even 10 years ago to now. There is huge support, whether it's for our music programs, our sports and athletics, just that huge swell of support every time that we're able to share what we're doing. So,
yeah. And, you know, you kind of you have a strange background, but everybody in school PR has some kind of a different path here. And so really looking back, it just all makes perfect sense, to where you are now. What I'm wondering is, could you share a little more about Austin Public Schools? Like, how big is your district? What are some of the challenges that you face? Because I know it's a pretty unique area in Minnesota.
If you give me just one second, I'm going to pull up our demographic information just so I get the numbers correct for you.
Yeah.
Information. Awesome. Sorry, internet's a little pokey right now.
That's okay, you know.
Demographic summary. Here we go. So as of last year, I believe October 1 data, we had 5,120 students across pre-K through 12. Yeah. Of those 5,120 students, nearly 57% are a member of an ethnic minority. So Austin is what's called a majority minority school district. Less than half of our student population is white, compared to the state of Minnesota as a whole, where it's less than 38% of Minnesota students are considered an ethnic minority. So we're kind of an outlier in terms of our demographics. We have more than 47 home languages spoken by our students, which for the state of Minnesota total, it's 346. But that number 47 puts us really close to the top in terms of diversity of languages at home. And again, this was last year, so now there really isn't that free reduced price lunch because Minnesota now is universal free lunch for students. But last year, we were at 67.1% of our students qualified for free and reduced price lunch, all in an area with a median household income of around $54,000, which again, for the state of Minnesota, was around $77,000-$78,000 last year. So for the population as a whole, somewhat on that lower end in terms of income, lots and lots of diversity. Our superintendent, this is his third year now, he actually was working in Rosemont at one point, and he said that Rosemont actually reminded him a lot of Austin, not in terms of just the huge size. Like Rosemont's big, but it's very bounded. Austin's very bounded. If you go too far in any direction, you hit cornfields. If you go too far in Rosemont, you hit freeways. But then there's a ton of diversity. There's a ton of just a specific feel to the city. That's kind of how Austin is, but in a small town setting. And so it's very unique, especially for the state of Minnesota.
Okay. And how long have you been with the school district? Like how long did you teach? And then when did you get into your role as the tech integrationist and then evolve?
So 16 years. We moved here when my oldest son was not quite 1 year old. The day we moved here is the day the 35W bridge collapsed in Minnesota. So, you know, easy to remember. Yeah. But I taught in the classroom for 5 or 6 years at that point, and then moved into the tech integration with a little bit of communication role. And then a couple of years after that, it moved entirely communications when our current director of communications retired at that point.
Okay, so you've been in kind of a full communications capacity for 8 years.
Give or take, yeah.
About. So I just want to point this out to our listeners, Ryan, because what you've been able to do, you know, working with this district is amazing. Like, you know, to be able to turn the tide and turn that negativity into positivity and all of those things, but it takes time. You cannot snap your fingers and do it overnight. And so you have really been able to build that, and you are responsible, like you said, photography and video and, you know, a lot of things, but social media has really been a great tool for you to use. So
absolutely.
Can you talk about how social media has helped you do that and how, you know, maybe you started back, you know, 8-10 years ago when you were kind of starting that and how it's evolved to tell that story of your school district?
All right. So when we started, we had no social media of any kind, no presence, no Facebook, nothing like that. We created a Facebook account, and honestly, it sat there for a month, month and a half without really anything added on to it because I didn't know what to start doing with it. Yeah. First thing we did, and we still do to this day, almost syndicating, I guess, is the best word for it, looking at our local newspaper, TV stations, things like that, any coverage that they were doing from our school, we were trying to share that out as well. So people could see this is where we're being mentioned in the news, which then led me to thinking, well, if we're sharing this anyway, what could we do to direct them towards better stories or towards specific stories that we would like? And so as I'm hearing from from a teacher about, hey, we're doing this cool project, or I see on the mailing list that these kids are going to be gone on this field trip to the apple orchard or whatever, being able to share that information with the local newspaper, who at this time is also very much interested in what stories can we tell about the community. And so kind of creating that partnership to, I don't say direct them to specific stories, but to help supply them with other options beyond just here's a press release from, you know, your test scores weren't great or some other negative thing. So how do we share that information with the local media to be able to share and get them where we want them to be, which then led into, well, now we're doing this. What else can we do to help create those stories? And so that's when I convinced somebody to buy me a camera, went out and started taking pictures in the classroom of students engaged in learning or of projects or of various fun things that are happening, so that people can actually see their kids or students in class doing things. And it's not just I'm hearing from my student, yeah, today we did some math. You actually can see the picture of there's the math problem on the board, the teacher showing them how to do it, or here's the student actually working on that in class or doing art or in gym. Just they can see their kids and they love that. They love being able to see their students actually engaged in learning, which led then to, yes, a picture tells a thousand words, but how can we start doing video? How can we start sharing that information so that it's more engaging with people? And for me, it's really cool to look at our very first YouTube video with that old janky camera. To now, it's a huge evolution just in the last 5-6 years of quality and the types of stories that we're able to tell. It's been slow in terms of evolving from where we started to now, but we have this huge amount of growth, which I think is amazing. We're, for a district our size, we're up over 7,300 followers on Facebook, I want to say. We haven't had quite as much buy-in with like Instagram and Twitter, that sort of thing. We do have quite a bit on YouTube, which I think is really cool. And actually, if we're going to talk about some of these things anyway, yeah. Some of my favorite stories related to YouTube. First, we started doing live streaming, going on location, streaming concerts, streaming plays, things like that. Mm-hmm. And we, the very first time that we ever streamed a concert, we actually got an email the very next day from a parent who was stationed in Iraq, who thought it was absolutely amazing that they were able to tune in when their kid was live on stage at their holiday concert and watch them, even though they're halfway across the world. And since then, we've gotten stuff from other people who are stationed overseas, from grandparents across the country, just that they're so thankful and amazed that they're able to be a part of their family, their student, their child, their grandchild, a part of that experience for them, because they can actually see them live. It's not just this recording that shows up months later or somebody telling them a secondhand story. They're actually able to tune in and see it, which I think is huge. And we've been trying to push that as much as we can to be able to share those experiences. That's number one. Number two, when we started live streaming, it was originally a kind of a free-for-all. YouTube just opened it up and you could do whatever. But at one point they changed their rules. So you could only live stream on location if you had over 1,000 YouTube subscribers. And this to me was pretty amazing. We were able to go on to our Facebook page and say, hey, we've been doing this and sharing this, and you guys, everybody seems to really be liking it. However, because of this change in rules, we need about 200 more subscribers to our YouTube channel if we're going to continue doing that. And within 2 hours, we had reached that. Like it was everybody responded right away. It was amazing. And so occasionally, like if we have a big, we need this many people to do this, or we need this kind of response for this situation, it's very rare when we will put out a call for that sort of thing, but unfailingly, we get the response that we're looking for, people being involved, people wanting to be a part of things. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. So looking back, you started with Facebook first, and then you got started with these others. Facebook, you'd say, is your most popular. YouTube, maybe your second. Now, I got to ask, Ryan, are you a solo communications shop? Like,
I am, yeah.
Okay, so just that. So you've got to do a lot of things. You're managing the social media for the district, right? So you are the one that posts on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and YouTube?
For our district level account, yes. We, at this point, have actually created a Facebook account for each of our schools. And then the principal, secretary, and usually a instructional coach or tech integrationist or somebody is attached to that as an editor so that they are able to be in the classroom and take pictures if I'm not able to be there and then share it with their specific schools. Our reasoning for the way that we set it up, we have four elementary schools, one intermediate school, a middle school, and then a pre-K center. Excuse me, I apologize.
No worries.
But if a student is at like Banfield, is one of our elementary schools, they might not care about what's happening at the middle school. They might not be as interested in what's happening at Southgate Elementary School. And so we wanted each site to have their own Facebook page and then to have a district level one where we say, okay, your student is in Banfield and that information, some of it will come back to the district site as well, so that you can kind of follow both as a parent and get both sides of that. But you're not hearing tons of stuff about athletics at the high school. If your kid is only in elementary, you might not care as much about that.
Yeah.
So trying to create differentiation there, which is why we have each site has their own.
And has that been working well for you? Because I know in some cases it's like, well, this school has these people that are really love social media and then some that maybe aren't as great, but is that going okay for you?
For the most part, it is. We do have a couple sites where it's kind of that situation. They're not quite as interested in sharing things, but that's kind of the tide has been turning there. And I think a lot of that is we've had some turnover in terms of like principals and things, but also seeing, you know, this is the engagement that these other schools are getting and this is how the parents are being involved and are learning about things. So maybe this school that doesn't normally post as much now is trying to do more because they know they're
Grab a not drink used of to water. He's drinking out of his social school for EDU cup right now, which is a great cup to, is it coffee or is it water or what's in there?
It is water.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Hopefully that'll help. Some days you don't know.
I'm not used to talking this much. It's crazy.
I know Ryan, I'm really proud of you because you're kind of a quiet guy. We got to meet in person. You're in our membership group. We got to talk at Enspera together with a panel and you did such a great job. But I'm guessing that you don't often get, you know, talk as much, right?
I'm not a talker. I'm a listener. And I think that comes with the communications role too. Like as a communicator, yes, there is. We need to share stuff, but a lot of it comes down to you listening.
Yeah, definitely. And you're doing a great job. You've got a lot of wisdom. So it's probably because you are usually quiet, you're taking it in. But this is exactly why I wanted you on this podcast, because you've got so much great information to share. So what I've got a question on is, with your content and you being a solo person, you know, does staff help get you stories, or are you going out and getting every story? Are you kind of watching those other social media pages? How does that work?
So every year at the beginning of the year, we send out an email district-wide just to teachers to encourage them, you know, as you have these cool things that are happening, let me know. And I'd love to come and take pictures, do some video if I can, or if you have pictures or you do video and things in your classroom, to share them with us that we can then push out to the district as a whole. And so we'll get everything from invitations to come see. There was one of the elementary schools did a science project where they actually took a pumpkin last fall, put it into a large glass container, and then watched it over the course of the rest of the year as it decomposed, and then eventually started growing a brand new pumpkin plant from the remains of the old pumpkin plant. And then they planted it over the summer. And then we went and took pictures in this past fall where that plant grew huge and there were pumpkins all over the place. So we were able to actually go and cover that because they shared that information with me based on that email that we sent out saying, hey, let us know about these cool things. And nobody would have known about that, again, because they really only did it in their own classroom. We have an AFNR teacher, which is agriculture, food, natural resources teacher, who takes his students on all kinds of field trips, whether it's to a farm or to a farm implements dealership, just out into the fields, just all kinds of cool things like that. If I'm able to go, great. If not, he'll take lots of pictures and send them back. And then we're able to write a story and push that information out to share with people as well. So cultivating those relationships with teachers to have them share information back, or with secretaries to be able to tell me about, we know this great thing is going to be happening if you want to come out and take a look. Developing relationships with the staff in order to get a lead on a great story so that you can go out and cover it, or talk to the people that are actually involved and see if they'll give you information or pictures that you can share that back out.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's grown over the years, right? Because yes. You're starting mm-hmm. out and you might only have a few people, and each year that's grown and grown. And now I'm sure you've got a great network.
Absolutely. It has. The more people actually see the benefits and how it helps to grow, helps to get that buy-in, the more people want to be a part of it. They want to be a part. Their parents want them to be a part. And then even the students start to, where is Mr. Mayers? Why can't he come take pictures? It's really weird. We were at the fairground this past week, actually, taking pictures of students who were on a third grade day at the farm trip, where they go to different farms. They end up at the fairground doing a petting zoo type thing. And a student that I hadn't seen probably since last fall saw me and was like, "Hey, it's Mr. Mayers. Hi, Mr. Mayers." And was like super excited that I was there because I was going to be taking their picture. And the kids love being in these pictures now. So yeah, it's creating an atmosphere where people want to be able to share their story. They want to be able to let people know what they're learning, what their students are doing. Just telling that story, creating that desire to share is amazing. So
yeah, and you're looking for the good stuff, and doesn't mean the bad stuff doesn't happen and that you don't have to deal with that, but
that's true.
We like to shine a light on all of that. So we've got, you know, things that happen day in and day out, which is really your foundation of your storytelling. Mm-hmm. You also have done some features, which I know helps give you some good content. And so are there any features that you want to mention that have done really well in your district?
So every week we actually do kind of a regularly scheduled thing, I guess is the best way to put it. Every Monday we've started doing engagement questions that we actually got from you guys, those 52 engagement questions for the year. Just sharing that with the community, getting feedback and response. I thought it was pretty cool this morning. I was looking at our responses from yesterday and I saw you had put something on there too.
What was your question? Because I thought it was a really great question and it made me instantly think of something. So
when you were a student, who had a huge impact on your life? It was a very basic question. The engagement questions are supposed to be very simple. Just a single color background, not a lot of pizzazz to it. Just a quick little question that somebody can answer, and we'll get everything from a one word somebody's last name to a full-on story about this person for this reason and how they impacted my life. And it's really neat to see. And so, like, on my end, on the back end, I like to go back and read through all of them and like each of the responses so people know that somebody's looking at them from our side as well. It's not just pushed out and left for whatever. Just to kind of create that interaction.
Yeah, and I'm going to link to that post, you guys, for who was a big impact on me. I responded. And so if you want to know the answer, click in the show notes. We've got the link and you can see exactly how simple this question of the week that Ryan's doing. You could go back and look at other ones that he shared as well. But we'll give a link to that post and you'll be able to see what me and, you know, more than 20 other people responded to that question. So that's an awesome one. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. 27 as of to this morning. So,
okay, cool. Anything else that you share on a regular basis or, you know, that you kind of.
Yeah. So every Monday we do an engagement question of some kind. Every Tuesday we do an alumni spotlight where we encourage people to fill out a form on our website. They just answer a couple quick questions and then include a current picture of themselves. So we're able to share how people who graduated from Austin are doing. And we've gotten everything from I graduated last year, here's where I am, to I just retired from my job of 50 plus years. And so you get to see a wide spectrum. And then part of those questions are, how did Austin help prepare you for the role that you're in? What tips and tricks would you give to current students? That kind of thing. And so we get buy-in from, oh, hey, I knew that guy when I was in school, to, oh, it's really neat to see somebody that went into electrical engineering from Austin. Maybe that's something that I could do when I graduate. And I just think that's really neat. Every Thursday, we do a staff spotlight. We encourage the community, whether it's other staff members, parents, students, to go on and fill out a quick little form just saying why they want to nominate a specific staff person. And as long as they are still working here, we will then reach out, have them submit a picture, and then we try to fit them into that rotation as we go. But just highlighting a specific staff member every single Thursday, which is huge for the staff member. They love seeing that. They love knowing that they have made a difference in somebody's life. And it creates kind of that goodwill, not only towards, creates that goodwill for the staff member, but then also as a community member, this person that's made a difference, whether it's in my life or in my student's life, I get to honor them to a certain extent. And then it's really appreciated and people really like that. And then every Friday we do a district-wide newsletter that actually rolls up, this part of it is the alumni spotlight, the staff spotlight, additional information from the superintendent, stories and all kinds of things from the week as a whole.
Okay, I love that, because you're doing content, then it ends up being content that you can reuse in different places. So you've got a district newsletter that also goes out. As far as having some things that are kind of regular happening with social media, how does that help you in your kind of overall management aspect and maybe a little bit of the sanity? You know, my book is all about like how to manage social media while keeping your sanity. So is there anything behind that that really helps you?
If I had to pick one thing that I really want to get better at myself, it would be how do we plan things out for what time to post and what content to go out at which point and all that kind of thing. Yeah. And I mention that because part of this is like the engagement question. It's on Monday morning, I say, oh, we need to do this. And I'll look at that list from you guys or lists that I found online. And we'll kind of pick one out and say, this one looks good for this week. Let's put that one in there. When it was coming up on the beginning of school, we were using a lot about what's your favorite memory from last year? What things are you looking forward to this year? It's not really like planned out months and months ahead of time. I need to get better at that. With the alumni spotlight, it comes down to we've used all the ones we already have. Now we need to start creating some new ones. And so we look at all the people that have responded and start pulling those in and batch them out. So we'll have usually a month and a half to 2 months ahead of time scheduled and ready to go. Staff spotlight's kind of the same way, but we have to contact the staff member and make sure, number one, they're okay being featured. And number two, that they have a picture that they're willing to let us use. But again, we'll batch those out 2-3 months ahead of time. And then our superintendent actually ends up resharing a lot of that information. And then, like I said, we end up putting those into our newsletter every week. Okay. Oh, Fridays. I forgot. Fridays, we also do a next week at Austin Public Schools kind of a calendar that almost shows every sporting event, concerts, important community events, things that are happening in a nice little template. So our fall one has fall sports along the left-hand side and then a picture of our stadium in the background. Winter sports has winter sports along the side and then pictures from our indoor gyms. And then our spring one does kind of the same thing, but with our track field where they use that for cross country and track and field events.
Okay.
So.
Well, we're going to link all of your social media channels. So our listeners will be able to kind of check out all of these things that you're doing on a routine basis. I love it. You attended the ENSPRA seminar in St. Louis. Was that your first ENSPRA seminar or not?
No, that was my second. The first one I went to was in Chicago.
Okay. And I was in Chicago too, which just seems like yesterday, but that was the year before. So you also presented. You did a great job with our panel. So just for those that are listening, can you just tell me two or three highlights from your seminar experience this summer in St. Louis?
The presenting was huge. It's weird for me being like having come from the classroom and then doing communications. I'm not great in front of people. And so the more that I can push myself out of that comfort zone and actually get in front of people and do things, I think the better. Because the way things continue to build, I feel like before too long, I'm going to have to be presenting to people on a fairly regular basis. So that'll be fun.
You did great, by the way. I just want to say, so you did awesome. So I love it. Well,
Thank you. So yeah, like the presentation I think would be number one. Number two is always, you know, getting to make connections and interact with other people that do the same type of job as you. The job alike sessions are always huge because you get to meet with other people who, in my case, are a one-man communication shop or do lots with photography, lots with videography, and you get to learn from other people that are in that same situation and not just somebody who's part of this 20-person team that happens to tangentially do a little bit with what you do. So having the opportunity to meet with other people that are in the same boat as you is huge. I guess number three, it's nice that you do get downtime and you can explore. With Chicago, it was great because you got to walk around and see lots of different things in Chicago, go up and down the river and see like the architecture tour and see stuff. In St. Louis, it was great. I actually walked all the way from where the seminar was down to the arch, walked around the arch, got to see that whole area, take some really nice pictures. Just kind of getting to explore places you might not normally get to go and explore, I think is a lot of fun. So, yeah.
And Ryan, would you say you're an introvert or an extrovert?
It depends on how long I've known you. Honestly. Yeah. Oh, look, I froze.
Yes, but we can still hear you, so you're good.
Okay. That's a great pose to freeze on.
You'll have to check it out on YouTube if you want to see the frozen picture, but it's good, Ryan.
And that's a lot of just comfort, getting to know people, getting to be comfortable with people. For me personally. Yeah.
But I think you did a great job of me. And I guess I would guess I'm like totally extrovert. Like that wouldn't be any surprise. So of course I love conferences, but sometimes it can just be intimidating, especially ENSPRA is a huge conference. There's so much, but there is so much to gain. And so next year we'll be in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I hope everybody will plan in July to join us in Seattle. I'm not sure if you'll be there for sure or not, Ryan. I know it is.
Oh, I'll be there. I'm excited.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. We're gonna be able to at least connect then, even though we should be able to connect more often since we're so close. But all right, I've stolen a lot of your time. We kicked somebody out of the office. So I just want to end with this, Ryan. What would you say is your best social media tip?
Oh. I like the things that your audience wants to see.
Okay.
I know that probably sounds really obvious, but people have a tendency to say, oh, I think it's cool when kids race cars, or I think it's cool when kids do this specific project, or only when they do art, which is great for you as a person. That's what you like. But if your families don't really like that as much, or if that's not what they're interested in, you're not sharing the story they want to hear about. So the biggest thing I can say is make sure that what you are sharing, what you're doing, what you are communicating is actually addressing what people want to learn about.
And not how just do you what know you that?
Want to tell.
How do you?
Well, a lot of that comes back to I've seen feedback on social media. You get comments and you get information coming back on the ones that people are really excited and interested in. And you get next to no feedback on, like I said at the beginning, we like to syndicate stories from our newspaper, which people will read them and they'll see them, which is great, but we don't get a lot of interaction, a lot of commenting, a lot of whatever. So people might not be as interested in that piece, but if you go and take pictures at a farm, at a petting zoo, at like when we had the seniors walk through the kindergarten center at the end of last year, we got tons of response on that. People love those kinds of stories. And so you start to get a feel for, this is the kind of story where I think we're going to get a lot of comments. We're going to get a lot of feedback. Those are the things we want to try to highlight because those are the things people want to hear about, which in turn means that's where we get the most connection and we develop those relationships, which in turn builds stakeholder. My mind just completely blanked out.
Yeah,
we build that stakeholder
buy-in, right?
There we go. Buy-in, yeah. And
so, like, Ryan, you just gave the perfect, I mean, I know you stumbled a little bit at the end, but just that whole synopsis of engagement and social media and, like, really understanding the purpose of it, like, you just summed it up so perfectly. You shared so much great content in this interview. If our listeners are wanting to reach out to connect, maybe to ask a little bit more or just connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So ironically enough, despite using social media a lot with the district and everything, I don't really do much with it myself. I don't have a Twitter. I don't have Instagram, that sort of stuff for myself.
Okay.
Honestly, email ryan.mayers@austin.k12.mn.us would be quickest. If you go on our Facebook channel, ISD492, and comment through there or through a message at that point, I can get back to you no problem.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. We'll link the email, and you just read it off. And so please reach out via email, follow what Ryan's doing. He, you know, we only got to talk a portion of the great stories that he's been sharing. But I've really enjoyed listening and learning from you, Ryan. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Absolutely. And then just real quick, I apologize.
Yes.
Just because I said the ISD 492 thing, and I thought maybe a quick thing to let you know. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have YouTube, we have Instagram, we have LinkedIn, but we don't really do anything with it. We have TikTok, we don't really do anything with it, but we were very intentional when we signed up for those. So every single one is at ISD 492. It's not different. It's not a variation. Every single one, no matter which one you go to, we are ISD 492.
Okay. And in Minnesota, each district has a number.
Yes.
And which right. I learned was sometimes it's a longer number than three digits because it's when two districts joined and then they've got that. But that's another like little quick tip is to keep that consistent really helps with your following on all of those channels so that it's.
Yes. Makes it really easy. So I like this school on Facebook. How can I find them on YouTube or how can I find them on Twitter? It's the same. The same one.
Yes. So. Very intentional and very great advice. Ryan, thanks for spending so much time with us today. I learned a lot. I know a lot of people are going to love this episode. Keep up the great work, and everybody, we will see you next time. Bye, Ryan.
I want to let you in on a little secret. Creating this podcast is my favorite thing to do. Now, I have a pretty amazing job all around, but podcasting is my happy place. Of course, podcasting doesn't pay the bills, and I have six kids, remember? So I wanted to remind you of the three ways I help schools through my paid programs. Number one, and most popular, is my membership group. You can join my exclusive virtual community designed for school social media managers. It offers a treasure trove of resources, including Canva templates, daily support, live weekly training sessions, and access to a vast library of webinars. You guys, with over 400 schools across the country already benefiting from this vibrant community, you'll gain insights and tools that can supercharge your school's social media presence. Number two way that I serve schools is speaking. I love to share my passion for social media, and I do this with communication organizations across the country and school districts. You know, my keynotes really deliver actionable tips and strategies that can be implemented immediately, ensuring that your school stays ahead of the communication curve. And last, number three, my team and I, we actually do social media management for schools. So many school districts struggle to stay consistent on social media, and that's due to a lack of dedicated communication personnel. So that's where we come in. Our team will partner with your school district to manage your Facebook and Instagram accounts, and we ensure a consistent flow of compelling stories that come directly from your staff. That's it. If you are interested in getting more details on number one, the membership group, number two, speaking, number three, the social media management, hop on over to my website, socialschool4edu.com. And then until next time, keep telling those stories.